I am 23. 29th of April 1976 to the 28th of April 1977. Over. The Four of Spades by Matt Walsack. It is hot and only going to get hotter. It turns out to be a record year for sweat and sunburns. A motley crew of us sit in a pub looking to accomplish the most mentally whilst performing the least physically. Charles Alexander fans out a deck of cards and implores me to choose one. I pick the Seven of Hearts as I hear, "Wait, don't look at it yet," and look up to see the disappointed face of my friend and present entertainer. He holds out his hand for the card, and I see him wiggle back into the form of the great presenter rather than a failed trickster. I give back the card. Charles once again shuffles and presents me with a parabolic selection. I choose a card, keeping it face down, and the phone at the bar rings. It's for Charles, and it looks urgent. He takes the phone, engages in a rally of quick whispers, and says, "Sorry, guys, see you soon," hurrying out of the door and into the balmy air. I am left holding a card that I am not meant to see. The rest of the deck is strewn across the table. It is determinedly holding on to the shape given to it by the former master. I never saw Charles again after that day. I still have the card I chose, and as a matter of principle, I have still not looked at it. It is a dream of mine that Charles will arrive at my funeral years from now, offering an impromptu eulogy where he simply says, "Bill's card was the Four of Spades," or whatever it happened to be, and later it is discovered and verified in my belongings. I'm not one to judge Charles's vanishing act. I've been the subject of many disappearances throughout my life. I've left many questions unanswered and performed many tricks that had an unsatisfactory ending. The same year as Charles' never-ending card trick, while working on an eagerly anticipated and soon-to-be critically acclaimed stage show based on Robert Anton Wilson's and Robert Shea's Illuminatus trilogy book series, it is said, I told the crew I was off to get some glue and never returned. This is more or less true. During that scalding summer, I'm in the prop and set area painting the Leif Erikson, a golden submarine owned by one of the main characters and Discordian extraordinaire, Hagbard Schelin. Schelin is a charming anarchist who happens to be a load-bearing plot point in every conspiracy theory and cultural oddity in modern history. He is well known to the people involved, but the average person in the book world would have no idea who he is. He takes joy in his involvement and seeing the changes, not in being called out for awards and or admonishments. I never finished the books, but this concept spoke to me and stuck with me. I got it in my head that I bring the whole Discordian thing of Illuminatus to the surrounding area, maybe get some local press, stir up some excitement. The plan was to paint the all-seeing eye of the Illuminati on every abandoned storefront in town. What happened instead is I was caught as I was painting my first window and told to appear in the local courtroom the very next day. The area itself was friendly to the weirdness of the times, but the peelers were a different story. In fact, while I was in custody, I was told they'd be making an example of me and that I'd better like striped pyjamas. I gave a false name, but they claimed to know where I lived and the circles I ran in. Perhaps it was an abundance of caution. but I chose to get out of town rather than stick around and see if I'd be doing jail time. Needing to lay low for a while, I knew we were low on glue for the theatre sets and told my crewmates I was off to get some that next day. I hitched a ride out of town early in the morning, leaving a note in my flat that said, "Nobody was ever here." This was to throw them off the scent, and I'm fairly sure it worked, as I was never caught. I did hear the theatre crew also found that note and wondered where I'd gone to. So the yin and yang of chaotic art and authoritarian conformity was completed in that way. While I was out of town, I stayed with friends of friends, outsider artists on the fringe of pretty much everything. The leaders of the group, if you could call them that, were Reg and Frodo, who looked nothing alike but said they were identical twins. They had made enough money to be self-sufficient, selling large, ambiguous metal sculptures to office parks, and made some outlandish claims about their artistic plans and abilities. One of their claims was that they had been given £20,000 by an anonymous source believed to be related to the Beatles, with the only restriction being that it had to be spent in a way that was really and truly weird and involving the destruction of something popular. On another occasion, they swore up and down that they had a line on an actual working tank and that they were going to sculpt a cliffside using the shells once they could source the ammunition. This was probably a poor choice of their collaboration shortly after running from the law. But the more time I spent with them, the more I believed it all. Eventually, I felt the heat had probably gone down on my misdemeanour, and I returned to the world of cities, crowds and law enforcement. I never went back to the Illuminatus Theatre Group as they had begun their successful tour. I felt I had perhaps done my part in making that happen. The one thing that sticks with me is the production really did need glue. I do regret not returning with it, or at least having it delivered. A year or so later, I mailed my friend, and now show's director, Ken Campbell, a box full of Aradite and a note stating, "Sorry, got called away. Here's the glue."
Under Mirror, Mirror by Doug Robertson. 23. It meant nothing and everything. Just a number, but yet more than that. It had power and defined me whether I liked it or not. As the odometer of my life ticked over once again, I dragged myself out of bed and forced myself to look in the mirror, ready to see what metamorphosis I had been lumbered with this year. Everything seemed to be in order. Eyes, nose, mouth, ears all seemed to be in the correct place and of the right amount. The walk to the mirror confirmed my knees had returned to their expected place, a fact for which I was thankful. Any differences must be internal, I surmised, or on my back, but a half-hearted exploration of that region proved fruitless. As the months progressed, I couldn't work out what this year's change was. People would converse with me as normal, but their eyes indicated something was wrong. An uncertain flicker, a flash of concern or fear, or sometimes even pity. Even strangers seemed to go out of their way to avoid me, giving me an uncertain look as they crossed the road or hugged the wall, if such a thing wasn't possible. Had I become a monster? Or was I exuding something that meant people were compelled to keep out of my presence? I pulled out my pocket mirror and checked my aura. No, It was the same as always. A little more ragged round the edges, a slightly greater intensity to the non-visible colours, but nothing that should give any cause for concern. But trying to explain this to someone as they frantically ran across the road, barely even taking the time to check traffic, proved to be a lost cause. Mirrors became my obsession. I would spend endless days staring at my reflection, trying desperately to work out what had changed, what had happened this year to cause that reaction. As the bright sunshine of summer faded to the dull, ethereal winter light via the warming hues of autumn, the shadows and highlights of the face in front of me would change, but the details remained unclear. I became unreliable, missing appointments and deadlines, as I would inevitably be delayed by any shiny surface, standing there, transfixed in front of windows, chrome-plated frontages, even hubcaps, as I tried to understand what had happened to me. I learned to avoid walking past the home furnishing store after finding myself trapped for what felt like hours in its mirror department, unable to move as I studied myself from all angles, still unable to see what people saw in me. Finally, I noticed the horns. I was studying myself in the bathroom mirror when I saw them, hidden amongst the grown-out and unkempt mess that my hair had become. I'd avoided hairdressers after an awkward session where I'd refused to leave, demanding angrily that the barber continue to show me the back of my head, losing myself in the infinite corridor of me, leading to a standoff that only ended when he threatened to call the peelers. But they were definitely there. They weren't visible from every angle, but they were there, twisting slightly and somewhat alive, the points turning towards the nearest light source, although whether that was instinctual or not, I couldn't tell. They were tender to the touch and radiated warmth, although there was an unusual dampness to this which caused even me to feel discomfort. "What are you?" I murmured to myself as I absently reached for my razor, wondering if that could be the solution to my problem. "I wouldn't do that if I were you," I answered, confusing myself. Except it wasn't me that answered. It was my reflection. My mouth and tongue had moved, but the voice came from inside the mirror. It echoed oddly as I struggled to regain control. "What?" I asked. "What's happening?" It was a trite response, but it seemed most appropriate given the situation. The lips of the reflection moved alongside mine, but I was relieved to hear the voice coming from my own throat this time. "It's a minor adjustment," came the response. I again felt the odd sensation of mouth movement that was not under my control. The mirror me seemed unperturbed and continued, "It will be over soon." "But what are you?" I asked, still fearful that if I didn't continue to respond, I would lose control forever. "That doesn't matter. I, or whoever was in the mirror," responded, "go about your life and try not to draw attention to us." But, I tried, but I felt my lips closing shut against my will and was unable to continue. I grabbed at my mouth, fearful that I had been struck dumb, but as soon as I turned away from the mirror, I was able to open it again. I felt in my head. The horns were still there, so I grabbed a hat and tried to recover my composure. As we passed through winter and headed into spring, the horns continued to grow, becoming more snake-like, twisting and turning aggressively. My attempts to disguise them with a hat became less successful, as they would angrily thrash around if I hid them from the light. after having to abandon Christmas, when their violent spasms nearly caused my jaunty Santa hat to fall off, I became a recluse. Attempts to talk to my mirror self were impossible. My mouth would lock up upon seeing my reflection. And so I hid, trusting that they meant no harm, while the horns grew big and fat, gorging upon the light they held so dear. And so it was, as I went to bed the night before my 24th birthday, they fell off. They squirmed and fled towards the open window, and although they had no faces, they still turned to look at me, almost grateful, before leaving. Satisfied, I slept peacefully, wondering what would face me in my 24th year.